The TOLO, or the TODO, as I call it, the Temporary Outdoors Dying Ordinance. Here's some more from that Tuesday protest, which we began to cover on Thursday, and I'll give you most of it. Here's some more.
No, we appreciate all the work that's going on and all the solidarity. One thing I also wanted to mention is that we need to see the issues of houselessness, and we need to afford and also think about permanent solutions, such as affordable housing. Also providing permanent solutions to them to make sure that houses move to our house, because that's the main goal. And also provide mental health services as part of those solutions. So I want folks to keep that in mind as well. But yeah, y'all. Thank you all so much, and I know we have a couple more speakers set out. This next speaker that we have is beyond fantastic. This great work in houses activism from the ACLU. So if we can welcome Abby Samuels.
Hi, everyone. Ordinance. But in essence, what the ordinance says is get out of fucking town. Get out of our town. That's about it. That's what it says. And it's really obvious from reading the ordinance. It's what the Cynthia Matthews machine consisted of: Martine Bernal, the city manager, Martine Watkins, city council person, and Mayor Karen, Mayor Meyer. And other staff that, bottom line, want to get rid of our houseless community. They will cheat and lie about the situation of our houseless neighbors, from taking away their garbage collection and then complaining that the houseless don't have, that they have too much garbage after they take it away. Right? I know some of the people that experienced that I'm looking at. They create false rumors that most of our houseless neighbors are not from here. For example, recently two police officers went tent to tent at San Lorenzo Park asking, "Where are you from?" Okay, so if they were to ask me where I'm from and I was in a tent, I'd go, "Huh? Oh, okay, let's see. Well, I was born in Newark, New Jersey, but I only lived there 2.5 years. And I was in Chicago. I lived there 15, I grew up there. So am I from Chicago? Am I from Newark? Oh, but then I lived in L.A. for 10 years. Well, maybe I'm from L.A. Maybe I'm from Salt Lake City. I lived there for 7 years. Oh, wait a second, but I lived here for 20 years. You can add those numbers up. I'm a lot older than that, but anyway. So where am I from? Fuck, I don't know. So what kind of question is that? What kind of fucking question is that? And it goes on to say, we continue to urge to reject the ordinance and instead work with the community to find meaningful solutions that will ensure the dignity and well-being of the unhoused in Santa Cruz. The DRC is a four-page letter that they wrote. I urge people that if you can read it, it's really well written. It's what a lot of people talked about today, so I won't repeat it. So basically, what can you do? I'd suggest, I think some other people, go to some of the campgrounds, go meet some of the people there, talk to them, get to know them. Also, if you ever see any, most of the people here probably have, it's not so unusual, but if you can, please film the police whenever you see any members of our vulnerable population out there being stopped. No matter, you know, just please start filming. If you can, either get it to the person if they're not being taken away, get their name, and find out how you can send it to them, or send it to Santa Cruz Cop Watch, which you could look up or ask someone around here. And what? Yes, get their badge numbers, the time and the place, and all of that. Also, a lot of people that are out there are starting to film themselves. The people that are living at the residents at a lot of the encampments are starting to film. What's so amazing about this is that it gives them the power. It gives them some more power instead of living around in shame. So that's starting to happen. I encourage that. Also, still try to call tonight at 7:30, whenever they start taking comments. Tell them how they're full of bullshit. Call everything, if you can call every single time during oral communication and tell the city council what you think about them, which is they don't, you know.
Illegitimate!
I usually say fire Bernal, but he's quitting anyway. So, fire Bernal and call, you know, and talk about Mayor Karen. How Mayor Karen's, make sure you can connect with someone here so you can find bigger coalitions to fight against. For example, they're starting a West Side or a West Side group to fight the other West Side group that believes all the West Side is. That's one. Caleb Carr.
West Side, we have hearts.
And also, there's some really great mutual aid groups. A new one that you've heard before, Sanitation for the People.
Woo!
Check out that. They'll go out and clean the encampments. I just read an article in San Jose. They have they're paying $90,000 to fund these groups to go clean up encampments. What do we do here? They take away that possibility by taking the garbage away, by taking pickup away. But we have the volunteers here, so we would like to do it. Continue that on, even if it. They're not going to pay us any money. And continue. I think this is really important. My last thing is look for great replacements for our next city council.
Yeah. Yay!
Thank you. Yeah, so I'm talking about major shots out to Happy Samuels. That's what I'm talking about, y'all. Let's keep that same energy. And talking about energy, the next speaker that I'm going to introduce is a comrade to the fullest. You know, an organizer and activist within Santa Cruz, UCSD students, and I just got much love for this dude, you know, to the fullest. Words can't express it, obviously. But Mr. Ayo Benjo, definitely come up.
Good evening, y'all. Good evening. How y'all doing? Yeah, it's cold as hell. We're all here, okay, and we're here to do one thing, okay, and that's to make one statement, all right? Now, one statement is we as a community are the ones in charge of the direction of city council, of their policies, of their economic policies, and of what they're funding, and they need to be funding counselor services from the police budget. Yeah. How many times have we talked about this? The police are currently funded over 28%. I'm sorry, this is really hard. The police are currently funded over 28% of the budget right now. And economic development is only funded 3.5%. So if you really, really, really care about community solutions,
solution. I've already said this before. Flip source is not the big thing. Your budget is your morals. Your budget and how you allocate funds is your morals. And so we're here to make one statement, and that is that we as a community are not going to accept anything less but solutions to houselessness. Nothing less. Nothing less. So at the end of the day, what we're going to do is we're going to continue to use this energy right now, especially right after I'm done talking, okay? Because I know we're recording stuff, we're going to post stuff on Instagram, we're going to do social media stuff, and that's all great. But we've already talked about this, all right? Y'all are not going to be doing anything if you're not translating your voices and coming out here into city council. If you're not translating your voices into voting them out. If you're not translating your voices into making sure that you're organizing your friends and your friends' friends and your friends' friends' friends, yeah. And you're telling them to come out here and stop. We have to come together and be honest with ourselves and say, what are we doing that's still allowing for this to happen? Because at the end of the day, this is a reflection of all of us. And the fact that they are still able to make these kinds of policies and potentially pass it means that we're not doing enough to make sure that we're protecting our community. So this needs to be about many things. We're going to come together after we're done talking. We're going to organize. We're going to connect. We're going to take each other's social media, each other's phone numbers, and we're going to make sure that we organize future rallies, future plans, future protests, future campaigns to make sure that we vote these people out and that we make sure that we are investing in houseless solutions. Yes. Homeless people did not have a seat at the table. How dare you, without any representation, try to make solutions for a community that you know nothing about, that you don't identify with? Isn't that shit called undemocratic? I thought we had a democracy. What happened? Anyways, I need y'all to get your energy all excited, all right? I know we're cold as hell. I'm cold as hell too. But listen, y'all, we're going to come together. We're going to stay together as a community. And we're going to continue to push forward this agenda to make sure that we create solutions and also that we also follow up and make sure that we actually defund the police. Yeah. That we actually reallocate short money into housing solutions. How can we allow, you know, one of the ordinances, it says that the people who are in charge of enforcing this ordinance is the police. What happened all of 2020? What happened to the Black Lives Matter street? What happened to, racism is a public health crisis. Housing is a racial justice issue. Yay! Excuse me? We need to make sure we're thinking intersectionally, all right, people? Because sometimes it's crazy how some people are still in office and they really have no competence. It's really crazy. But listen, y'all, I really appreciate y'all for giving me the time to speak right now, but I need y'all to really let this be a self-reflection of yourself, of how you are impacting the movement, of what you can do to contribute your energy and your thoughts and your voices into the conversation, and make sure you come out at 7 o'clock to make sure you tell City Council that you will vote them out if they pass this resolution. All right, y'all? I appreciate y'all. We're a family. We're here together. No Tolo. Say no Tolo after me. Ready? No Tolo.
No Tolo.
No Tolo.
No
Tolo.
No Tolo.
No Tolo. Thank you, y'all. I appreciate y'all. Love y'all.
And that was, I think, nearly the end of that protest. It lasted for about an hour and a half outside City Hall on Tuesday evening, a couple hours before the City Council took up its rubber stamping of the TODO ordinance, or what they call the TOLO ordinance. Of course, I'm not... it was about 100 people there, maybe a little bit more, 120 maybe, varied at times. A lot of young folks. But I guess I was concerned that the proposals that were advanced as to what people should do, call the City Council during the one-minute period that mums the word Myers, our mayor, is going to let people talk, was really demeaning and pointless in a certain sense. Playing along with their framework of pseudo-democratic input when you don't really have any real input. But perhaps people were exchanging information and signing up, though I noticed the sign-up lists only seem to appear very late. So I don't know how much of that actually worked. It's mainly, of course, the rhetoric that was... I've talked about how the actual ordinance itself, which passed, is actually going to come back to be made worse in a couple weeks, supposedly lacking enforcement until the resources arrive. But that's usually the pretext of these sort of NIMBY policies or laws. They're always claiming that they have adequate spaces for people to go to, but the real issue is to get people gone from the spaces that they're in. Let's hear a little more, although I think we may have reached the end of our rope here, let's hear a little more.
I don't think y'all were loud enough for my brother Ayo, so I want you to give him a little round of applause for that excellent speech. Sounds good, and make sure that y'all come up at 7 p.m. Make sure that y'all remind these people that city council are there. They're not there just because they have power. They're there because we have the power. It's people power. They ain't got no power at all. We can vote them out just as much as the neoconservative and proto-fascists voted them in.
And there's another problem. You can't really vote them out that easily unless you have a lot of money and a lot of power to press for a recall, or you want to wait a year and a half and then hope you can build up some kind of organization. The electoral system is not really working too well here. But what people do have the power to do is to dissent and resist on a day-to-day basis and to defend those people who need defending as the occasion arises. This happened in San Lorenzo Park last December. And this continues to happen. There's going to be, a decision either next Wednesday or Thursday by the federal judge, Susan Van Coolen, as to whether the San Lorenzo Park injunction is going to continue to stand. And, of course, there's going to be all kinds of movement against homeless people elsewhere in the city. Brent Adams' views notwithstanding on that regard, though who knows, maybe he'd acknowledge that as well. Now, I originally skipped the first speaker because, frankly, he went on so long and seemed to be sort of so much into personal anecdotes that I didn't feel I had the time for it. But I'm going to provide a little of it now. This is the first speaker, and I have a little trouble clarifying exactly who he is, but you at least get to hear what he says, and maybe you'll figure out who he is, too.
So you're Hector.
Yeah.
I'm Robert.
What's your name?
Robert.
Robert, nice to meet you, Robert.
I'm Travis.
Yeah, you too.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Those way in the back across the street, raise your hand if you can hear me. I'm pointing everybody across the street. Can you hear my voice? Exactly. I got a lot of things to say, so I need you to hear me. You feel me?
Yeah.
So I want to thank everyone for coming out. I want to thank all the beautiful activists, organizers, demonstrators, and people who put this beautiful event together. Thanks to people like Hector, NAACP at UCSC, inviting me down here to speak with you all today and show support and solidarity about this issue that's been, I'm not going to be around the bush at this point, but it's been talked about for far too long, and we got to get shit done about this. Excuse my language, throughout my speech, and if I offend everybody with my words, but I gotta be real with y'all at this point, because this homeless issue has been going on for far too long, and as a member of the Santa Cruz community, this homeless issue was more personal for me due to my personal experience, and this personal experience kind of dates back to my earliest experience living, moving to California at the age of 9, moved to San Francisco at the age of 9 from Atlanta, Georgia. With the resources, very limited resources, I lived in the shelter, in the Haight-Ashbury district. At first, being homeless at the age of 9, when I saw the Haight-Ashbury district, the first thing I thought of was the That's Our Raven show on Disney Channel. And I was like, you know, the Hate Asbury district's not so bad. You know, Raven Simone lives here one time. And, you know, I stayed in the shelter down there, a lot of bunk beds, a lot of, you know, families like myself, a lot of individuals, you know, trying to overcome the struggles. And the first night was a little bit scary, you know, waking up in the middle of the night, you know, on the top bunk, you know, my family on the bottom bunk, you know, seeing rats, you know, running across the floor, and got a little terrified and couldn't sleep that night, the first night in. And, you know, eventually, you know, transitioned into more housing, you know, moved into better housing, quote-unquote, in the Tenderloin District. For those who lived in San Francisco, you know all about the Tenderloin. You hear about the last stereotypes in that district. And from there, lived in the Sunset District in a one-bedroom. And from there, you know, obviously, due to the 2008 crisis, couldn't afford the rent. Why? Because we got politicians who didn't care about helping out those who are in need. For example, for those who glorify, you know, Gavin, you know, Governor Gavin Newsom, I remember when he was mayor of San Francisco at the age of 9, that same city I was, you know, going through my struggles. And my parent, you know, mom was a licensed nurse working in mental health facilities, you know, helping out those with mental health problems, working at a mental health hospital, which was, you know, shut down due to budgeting issues, which would be the common theme of what we're here today, you know, as far as helping our vulnerable individuals, you know, due to the vulnerability. And like my mother and like, you know, rest of those nurses and doctors, they tried to advocate, you know, okay, you're going to shut it down. You know, let's have, you know, at least a walk-in clinic so these people can get help. And, you know, the same governor, Gavin Newsom, he was like, you know, due to budgeting, we can't even have, you know, clients. We can't even have clinics open right now. And, you know, due to that, you know, I moved on down to Santa Cruz here in November of 2008 due to that situation in San Francisco. And, you know, once again, you know, going through the struggles of homelessness in this, you know, in the state of California. And, you know, me and my family, we stayed at the homeless shelter over here over on River Street. You know, for those who know, you know all about it, you drive past it every day. Rather your bike, you walk past it every day, you hear stereotypes about what's going on in that area, known as Tent City. And moved there at the age of 7th grade here in 2008. And my experience of homelessness made me more of an introvert. Didn't want to speak much to anybody. You know, as a 13-year-old, it's kind of tough to, you know, walk into class at Mission Hill Middle School and talk about your experiences up to this point. You know, when a lot of kids were talking about Justin Bieber at the time, talking about whatever's popular in social media around, you know. During that same time period, my first exposure to police brutality before I left, you know, it was a gentleman by the name of Oscar Grant that was all over the TV screen before I left the Bay Area during 2008. And from there, you know, trying to, you know, personally overcome the struggles of homelessness in the community, be able to find transitional housing due to my parent going to be able to go to school at Cabrillo, and eventually be able to find, you know, affordable residency in Capitola, you know, which I proudly reside in now. Not too proud because not too many BIPOC members there, as you know. And from there, it's I haven't seen much change in about the homelessness in Santa Cruz since 2008. You know, many reasons why I became an introvert, don't really talk much, is the lack of empathy that I noticed when I first moved to Santa Cruz when it comes to homelessness. Very lack of empathy, very lack of understanding. When it boils down to helping our most vulnerable, helping out those overcome their struggles so they don't have to be like me, very lack of empathy is always an excuse when it comes to budgeting, which I'm going to get to down later. It's always that excuse. It always boils down to money. And now when it comes to helping our vulnerable members up to this point, especially during this pandemic, you know, we all realize what it's like to struggle during this pandemic. We all wonder what it's like to wonder if we're going to pay our bills or are we going to get our next meal. Similar to our homeless brothers and sisters out here on the streets. And in the last few years, you know, getting involved in activism, I didn't think I would be standing here with you folks today. I thought I'd be like everyone else, like people driving by, watching what's going on or seeing what's going on social media. But I wouldn't say the movement chose me, you know, be a cliche thing to say. You know, being stopped at Capitola, you know, on my way, you know, during the early part of the pandemic, a year ago now, going to the bank to cash, you know, withdraw some money so I can pay my phone bill at least. I was stopped by a Capitola officer who racially profiled me for looking for a suspect. And that suspect, you know, he showed me 8x10 photo before saying why he stopped, not saying why he stopped me, and it was a light-skinned Hispanic male. And when I filed a police report, I filed a complaint. I was saying, you know, simply, this is bullshit. And I shouldn't be profiled, I shouldn't be stopped, you know, for no reason, no justification, just for simply because of the way I looked and the way I appeared. And the excuse for that was the officers were working very tenaciously to look for this suspect who simply just broke in a car wash on 41st Avenue. And when I filed my police report and I went off on the sheriff, went off on the supervisor, you know, I live right off 41st in Capitola. Why would a dumbass break into a car wash when he lived blocks away from it? And for their justification, to simply ask me, do you want that officer to simply be fired for profiling? That's kind of the nonchalant response I got. I said I didn't want that officer to be fired, but I wanted accountability, that saying they're racially profiling very few members of BIPOC members in this community is not okay. And you must address that. Profiling a lot of our vulnerable members in the community, like the homeless, is not okay. And from there, I got involved in the movement. You know, I saw, you know, my friend of mine, Lloyd, went to UCSC. He was telling me about this march that's going on at West Cliff. He was like, hey, I heard about this Black Lives Matter march that's coming in town, and I wanted to attend. I wanted to see if you could come with me. And at the time, you know, working at the farmer's market right up the street over here, I didn't think I would be able to make it. Just time constraints, and that's kind of a lot of excuses. You know, I didn't think I would be here. And then I made it out to the march. I saw the crowd. It was amazing. It was inspiring. And that's something I wanted to, and I thought after that march, I felt, you know, it was a lightning in the bottle almost, if you can say that. And I felt that, you know, things can happen. I felt it. And I made up, and I felt that needed to be pushed a little bit more. The movement, the awareness about, you know, helping each other out as a community needs to be pushed a little bit more. So that's what inspired me to bring the activism up here for Juneteenth.
Yeah.
And to bring awareness about systemic issues and to talk about issues of our history, which is important, which I brought up in education and one of my goals of that march, education, learn about people like London Nelson people don't know about. You know, people all look at the name, you know, London Nelson Center, they don't know the man behind the center. They just see a community center where they see homeless people sleeping out in front of the lawn. See people might be selling a little bit of dope behind the building. And it's normally a stereotypical area. And I thought it was an injustice that a man who brought so much to the community, whose name would be stereotyped in that sense, without knowing the name behind the man, if you know where I'm coming from. And then just to spread awareness about the history of Juneteenth, why it's important, why we need to learn about our systemic issues, because right now we got a lot of things going on through social media, through our media outlets, through our politicians, that's trying to separate fact from fiction. And as a community, we can no longer be blinded by fact and fiction. We need to know what's real, what's simply bullshit. You know where I'm coming from.
Yeah!
You're right!
And from there, I'm not going to lie to you, I've been a little disappointed as an activist, because going into the activism thing, you immediately want change, you immediately want something to happen overnight. You know, after Juneteenth, I was inspired. I was like, okay, let's get it going. You know, I sat in meetings with the, you know, San Cruz Mayor, formerly San Cruz Mayor Cummings, you know, talked to Chief Mills, talked to all these organizers, and they're like, you know, how can we bring change in the police department? How can we bring true reform in the police department? So that's why I started. A light bulb went off, the bad apple bill. You know, started spreading awareness on social media, Instagram. Started spreading awareness on change.org, something called the bad apple bill. All my policies listed reforms, and all those reforms, I thought about all these cases. I thought about Oscar Grant. I thought about Breonna Taylor. I thought about Vanessa Gielen. I thought about all these victims of police brutality and all the common themes behind these injustices and coming up with a true solution behind these problems. And, you know, at first, you know, I looked online, I was like, hey, I got 1,000 signatures. You know, I'm going to keep rolling. I'm going to get 500,000. I'm going to get 1 million, 2 million, 3 million. The whole world is going to see this bill, and we're going to bring change. Got a little disappointed. You know, only at 1,300.
Hey, that's a good beginning.
You want to speak louder, Norton?
course. Would you like to speak to me?
Okay. And, yeah, from there I was a little disappointed about other things going on, seeing a lot of hate crimes in the community.
And I was a little disappointed he was going on at such great length with lots of generalities and rhetoric, but very little specifics. Just sort of these broad, sort of hot point issues that, you know, you can get people to say, yeah, yeah, but it doesn't have much to do with any meaningful specifics about the Santa Cruz Police Department, about racism specifically in Santa Cruz. Yeah, it's true. Loudoun Nelson, or London Nelson, if you will, the community center, which has been closed. I think it's still closed. But its bathrooms were closed to poor people and African-American poor people as well for 2 years before the COVID. And it's, you know, unless you talk about the particulars, you're not going to get the particulars changed. And to vaguely talk about police misconduct and this sort of thing, to me, is to frankly waste all our time. I didn't like it. But, you know, that wasn't me up there speaking. Presumably he was saying what he thought was important. But, well, I'm going to try to turn to what I think is important, which is what I do all the time, and or some of the time anyway. And that pretty much was the pre-council protest that was. And then it started to rain, and we all went home. And talk of a march to Mayor Meyer's house, apparently it had evaporated or washed away in the rain. Nobody proposed it. Nobody proposed planning anything down the road. There is stuff coming up later today, if you're listening to this on the 15th, or the 14th, sorry. The 14th, that there's, of course, this there's a Food Not Bombs event that's celebrating the one-year anniversary of the COVID survival station. That's Food Not Bombs. Huff and the Santa Cruz Homeless Union have been engaged in, mostly Food Not Bombs, and somewhat the Santa Cruz Homeless Union, and very peripherally Huff, by providing clothes and food every day in a city that is largely oblivious to or hostile to its homeless folks, or at least certainly the city government. I'm likely to show up there from 1:30 to 2:30 at least. I think, as I mentioned before, we're going to try to encourage people to see if they're interested in doing some tabling downtown. I was thinking of some tent tabling. But whatever other specific resistance activities that can be done to dramatize the absurdity and the cruelty of the Santa Cruz, not just this ordinance, but the police department's policies using other ordinances to fundamentally accomplish the same sweeping purpose, that is to say, sweeping the poor away from visible places in the community and out of the community entirely, if possible. And there are a couple of other things happening. I believe there is a parade of endless mischief, as it's called, starting outside the Sub Rosa Cafe at 2:30. And before that, at the Sub Rosa, from 11 to 2 today, Sunday the 14th, if this is the day you're listening to this, the really free market. So those are all things you can check out, as well as check out that, I guess there's going to be a band playing at the Food Not Bombs event throughout the afternoon today, March 14th. Here's an interesting story. Anti-loitering law slammed as biased. It's in the Tuesday, March 9th Chronicle. Senator proposes bill to strike charge often used against transgender women, by Dustin Gardner, Sacramento. California's anti-loitering law is so vague that innocuous factors such as wearing tight clothing, talking to pedestrians, or standing on the wrong street can lead to prostitution charges, according to activists pushing for a change. LGBTQ and racial justice advocates want legislators to repeal the law on the grounds it leads to disproportionate police enforcement against women of color and transgender women. State Senator Scott Wiener, Democrat of San Francisco, introduced a bill Monday to rescind a 1995 law that prohibits loitering in public places with the, quote, intent to commit prostitution. He said the wording is so arbitrary it has inevitably led to bias in how police and prosecutors use it. It's all based on profiling, so not surprisingly the people who are being profiled are largely trans women and black and Latinx women, Weiner said. It's just an awful law that can only be enforced by profiling and stereotyping. His proposal, SB 357, would erase California's law and allow people with prior convictions to have their charges dismissed and their court records sealed. Last month, New York became the first state to repeal a similar anti-loitering law meant to discourage prostitution. Opponents have dubbed such laws walking while trans bans because police often arrest transgender women. Bambi Salcido, president of the Trans Latin Coalition advocacy group in Los Angeles, said the law allows police to harass transgender women on how they look, how they walk, or whom they're talking with. Many of us don't have the privilege of passing as a non-transgender woman, and so we get stopped, questioned, Salcido said. Oftentimes we're just hanging out with our friends or even walking to get milk at the store. She said the problem is magnified because transgender people, particularly trans women of color, are often poor and live in neighborhoods that are high crime where police are more likely to focus on them. According to a 2020 paper by students at the UCLA School of Law, black adults accounted for 56% of the 2,202 charges for violating the anti-loitering law in Los Angeles from 2017 to 2019. Black people make up about 9% of the city's population. Sounds like black people being busted downtown for anti-homeless laws in Santa Cruz in 2013 by then-SCPD officer Barnett. Women accounted for 67% of all charges. The study did not include data on charges against transgender people, and it's possible some transgender women were grouped with men. T.S. Jane, a sex worker in San Diego and organizer for transgender and sex worker rights, said many transgender people feel anxious about how they dress and walk in public, regardless of whether they work in the sex industry, because they fear police harassment. It's not a crime to express your gender loud and proud, she said. If this bill passes, it's one step to trans liberation. Nationally, the effort to repeal anti-loitering laws has gained traction as part of the Black Lives Matter movement. Activists say such laws have been used since Jim Crow days to remove people of color from certain neighborhoods. Weiner said California's law was among 1990s tough-on-crime ordinances that gave police wide latitude to target, quote, undesirable people. This is a vestige of a time that we need to really firmly put into the history books, he said. But the effort is likely to face opposition from some law enforcement associations. Weiner's bill would not decriminalize sex work or repeal other laws that prohibit soliciting prostitution. However, he said he hopes the bill is a step in that direction because criminalizing sex work pushes people underground and makes people less safe. In New York, some Republicans in the state legislature framed the effort as a Democratic ploy to push for the legalization of prostitution. But that opposition softened after the State District Attorneys Association said the loitering law had caused, quote, harassment and unjust arrests. T.S. Jane said starting a debate about the merits of legalizing sex work isn't ultimately a bad outcome. I feel that America in general, as a collective, we're just so scared to talk about sex, she said. But if we take that power back and shift the narrative, I feel like that's the first step to sex workers' liberation. And that's an article from the March 9th Chronicle. Senator says repeal loitering law and enforcement bias, and a story by Dustin Gardner.
They lied about the wars, took time to figure out that democracy and freedom was not what it was about. They said we fight the terrorists, but all that I could see was I was occupying someone else's country. They lied about the weapons, they all were so convinced. The generals on the TV haven't heard from them since. They say it was an accident, but I think it was their plan. They spread the lie on CNN and NPR and C-SPAN. They lied about the jobs, all the pundits used to say before this city was abandoned and the good jobs went away. sign up to this free trade bill. Win-win all around. Now half the guys I used to know are 6 feet underground. Is all they seem to do. Looking at us on TV, they pretend they care, but it's all about the money, which anyone can tell. If you have half a brain, why I should believe them now? It just seems insane. Talk turned to the virus. We all stood to lose. I was not the only one who thought it was fake news. I just went about my life like I normally would do. So maybe I'll catch a cold, I thought, or a little flu. This hospital bed, if I could just click undo, I guess I would have worn a mask, stayed home to quarantine instead of being intubated, hooked up to this machine. You can see that I'm an idiot, maybe I don't know, but before I take my leave, before I have to go, before they stick me in a box with quarters on my eyes, there's lots of blame to go around here, and I know where it lies. About the wars.
And that was one by David Rovics, They Lied, and you got a lot of his stuff from a new album that's available online. Check it out on, I guess, davidrovics.com, or just browse for David Rovics, R-O-V-I-C-S. So I put through a call to Brent Adams, see if we could chat directly instead of me arguing with his video, and he said he was busy at the moment, but he suggest I call back when he's not in the middle of a surge of activity, and these are his office hours over at the Footbridge Services. So I may do that. So meanwhile, down Santa Barbara way, it looks like there's some nasty things happening. I've been getting some emails from a collection of people with the Committee for Social Justice down there, clearing out a homeless encampment in Pershing Park, which is, as I understand it from talking with David Hopkins, you may have heard the conversation, I guess it was either Thursday or Sunday, the biggest collection of homeless folks in tents in town, perhaps the only homeless community of that size. And while it can be a strain to have a bunch of people together in the same place and constricting and, aggravating to people, kind of like too many rats in a cage, if you will, it also is creates a possibility of real community and mutual aid and support, which is, I've been the situation, I think, at Ross Camp, in the Benchlands, and more recently at San Lorenzo. Peter Marin sent this report around. I'm going to read it. Police began clearing folks out at 9 a.m. David Hopkins was there mid-morning. So was W. Mellinger. I got there at about 11:30. Almost all done. Police said that at least one homeless substance abuser said, yes, it had become disorderly, a bit crazy, drugs, some violence, frequent screaming, unstable residents. Not clear if that's why it was shut down. Probably 30, maybe 50 homeless displaced. Police had collected several tents whose owners were gone. Not clear what would happen to them. One cop said they'd keep them for a while for retrieval. A couple of folks thought others, via another cop, that if folks didn't show up by the get-out deadline, they'd go to the dump. Also, the playing fields were to go back into use. The bathrooms reopened. Another reason the homeless might have been dispossessed, to avoid encounters and keep the bathrooms cleaner. It's possible the scene had gradually grown slightly out of control. Of course, the answer would be a monitored situation with tents kept a reasonable distance apart, sort of an open-air shelter. No suggestion the city has anything like that in mind, simply dispersed folks to new areas as they usually do. The actual case Of why the evictions, excuses, reasons, legitimate or not, to my mind, a mystery still. Maybe others there will comment. Another activist, Russell Brown, wrote, after talking to police who showed up at 9 instead of at noon, has told me that they have given a 72-hour prior notice to our peeps. They have said anyone who does not leave or leaves and returns in the future will be arrested. I had my tent attached and set up on my car and asked if I could do this every day, and the reply was yes, but not a new of the peeps in the park. I don't know what that means. They will be arrested for returning even as a day camper, profiling. And actually, that's David Hopkins, not Russell Brown. He says he's available by phone, so I'm going to give him a call, see what he might be able to add to this. So we're giving David Hopkins a call.
Your name after the tone, and Google Voice will try to connect you.
And we'll see if we get him. Robert Norris in Santa Cruz. It's just like we're in a studio. But we may not get anyone here. And looks like we're probably out of luck. And here's a report from a woman named Nancy McCready. I call her Nuff Said Nancy because I knew her 25, 30 years ago nearly now when I was working down in Santa Barbara as a kind of an advocate for the Legal Defense Center, which was defending homeless people and organizing them on the streets in favor of, or with the idea being a lawsuit, which eventually became the Tobe court case. Nancy has this to say. I love the introduction. It is well informed and the history is correct. I probably should read what that is before we go any further. Let's see. I guess she may be referring to a Zoom meeting that some of these advocates are planning. Circulating flyers advising homeless people whose property has been seized to contact the Committee for Social Justice, composing a letter to the editor, circulated to the media, meeting next Wednesday on Zoom to chat about things and maybe come up with some ideas as to what to do. Apparently, Nancy McCready suggested to one of the supervisors, I believe, or maybe one of the city council members, or I'm not sure, Kathy Murillo. Fairgrounds is under state control. The governor could step in. That there was getting bad with lots of fighting and meth sales and usage, she says. Nancy suggested the following locations to Murillo: Sears Building and the Fairgrounds. And one of the reporters for the local Santa Barbara paper made it down to Pershing Park during the raid. David Hopkins noted sweeps of encampment. Most everyone was gone, leaving whole sleeping bags, backpacks, etc. Camping gear thrown in sanitation trucks like trash. People may have been arrested. People moved to nearby area. No instruction as to where people could go except where they cannot go for the weekend. East Beach, Pershing, and the ballpark. This is down in Santa Barbara. Can't go to the beach. Hopkins spoke with officers, asked why he doesn't have to leave. They told him it was because he wasn't asked to leave. My, my. Why not lower tent at nighttime? Spoke to Sergeant DeJohn. They're starting to use the park for youth sports. There was camping equipment in good condition thrown into the sanitation trucks. Police indicated that items of value would be held for 90 days. However, two other activists believe the camping equipment went in sanitation trucks, not police vehicles, and thus went to the dump. And in response to a suggestion that folks get together and talk with business people and merchants, here is what... Well, Peter Marin has to say, I believe. In the past, bringing business owners, he's a local writer down there, an activist who we've had on the show before, Bringing business owners into any conversation, re-homelessness has set back any possibility for a solution. Case in point would be Casa Esperanza, where inclusion of businesses in discussions ended up with a statement and the organization giving up. Downtown merchants were no better. They push very hard at all times for cleansing and disenfranchisement of the poor. Sorry to say that, but it's the case. There are occasional exceptions. I think the best bet, and not a very good one, might be the supervisors. He cites a few of those. Thoughtful guys, when examined closely without much power, they do respond historically to decent ideas presented close to completion and only in need of funds. On their own, as they did with the Project Room Key funds, they just fuck things up, or they rely on staff, and staff somewhat independently fucks things up. You should come up to Santa Cruz and check out our staff and our county personnel. Several of us have found Goleta's, that's a nearby town, I think it's either north or south of Santa Barbara, and council to be far more open to novelty and notions than anyone else. Also, anyone should include, and he suggests some other people who he thinks have good ideas. As for the business community, I repeat, every attempt to include them in solutions has gone astray and proved a waste of time. There's no give whatsoever in their rid Santa Barbara of the homeless approach. Also, he made some more suggestions about individual people he thinks should be contacted. Thing is, maybe these folks in the end do very little, and maybe things can be achieved while ignoring them, but I'm not at all sure of that. The problem involved them, and everything slows down. If you're talking about, for example, the United Way, don't involve them, and they constitute a system of inertia, making solutions difficult. The general, so if you involve them, you win, you lose. If you don't involve them, you lose. The general strategy requires A, a lot of thought, and B, at least some help from a few folks within the system, real help, not just lip service to solutions you've discussed for 30 years without success. Signed, Peter Marin. Now, after the Tuesday night protest, there were some conversations with news media. KKION-TV was there. And there was more discussion than usual with them. I'm going to play a bit of that. And this takes place in the breezeway under shelter of the sort of the passageway leading up to the city council assembly hall area that is closed, of course, and has been for a year, forcing people to zoom in if they want to wait, take the time and trouble, but not to be able to attend in person. The person who is speaking is A.O. Banjo, who was talking again to a KON reporter. And here she is. And here he is.
Are you part of an organization?
Yeah, I'm with the UCC and the NAACP, and I'm actually starting a new organization pretty soon. It's a podcast called Solving the Crisis, so I'm going to be working on these issues for a while in Santa Cruz.
Okay, so can you tell me as to why you came over here?
Yeah, I mean, well, I came over here because at the end of the day, like, the temporary ordinance on living is not a solution to homelessness, and so we need to figure out how we can create community-generated solutions and make sure that we have the houseless communities and houseless organizations a part of the table where decisions are being made about where to allocate money, where to allocate funding. And so at the end of the day, with this whole procedure, let alone the policy, the procedure itself is so problematic and undemocratic, it's not including all the individuals who are going to be affected by this issue at the end of the day. So that's why I'm here, out here right now, to make sure that we're using our voice and our power and our presence as Santa Cruz community members to make sure we are voicing our concern about how this ordinance does not solve any housing issue. If anything, it's just a rich person's checklist of how to make sure that they have control over people getting citations of living in certain areas. And so that's my biggest issue with this ordinance today.
How do you feel that this affects BIPOC?
Yeah, so, we have been living in a pool, in a politics of pool. We're living in a pool drain politics. What does that mean? That means that we see things as zero sum. So at the end of the day, like, initially, we used to have a lot of public resources, public funds, and so what happened was in the 1960s, when we had civil rights legislation being passed, we also had a complete devaluing of public resources, because now black communities, brown communities can now benefit from free college and from some of the Federal Housing Administration loans and other ways to be able to climb up the social ladder. And so when we understand that the reason why we don't have as many public resources is because we don't want the black community and brown community to have benefited that much from it, that's when we look at housing in itself and how much it's exacerbated. It's because of the fact that we have this pool drain politics, zero-sum thinking, where if some people benefit, then we don't benefit. Or if some people benefit, we would rather have no one benefit at all than having minorities included in it. So when we're thinking about housing solutions, when we're thinking about housing as a racial justice issue, it's because even the idea of creating certain sections where you can't actually live, or where you're targeting a certain community that can't live in that area, that sounds like redlining. That sounds like the racial legacies and racial history of housing and how it's completely been distorted to affect our marginalized minorities. So we cannot tolerate this idea, this unique American brutality that was first rooted in slavery and in this racist policies that have affected the incomes of black people and brown people, and then now say that we want to continue that same segregation policy and perpetuate this us versus them scenario. It's just not healthy for us, it's not democratic, and honestly, it doesn't solve any problems. So that's why this is a racial justice issue, because at the end of the day, we need to figure out how to invest money, public dollars, taxpayer dollars, back into creating high resources for homeless communities, and make sure that we're allocating those funds initially, specifically, so that way the housing community are the ones who are affected, are the ones who are deciding where the money is being funded.
Is there something that you would like to say to Santa Cruz County City Council?
Yeah. If you care about black lives, if you care about brown lives, if you care about creating solutions and creating a community where we can all thrive, then we have to come together to create those solutions. It can't come from a small group of people who don't represent the problem and who are not affected by the problem. Every problem has to have the solution from the people who it's been affected by. And so if we know that this procedure is not even being approved, it's not even being endorsed by the Santa Cruz Homeless Union, by any of these nonprofit organizations, by any of these anti-racist homeless organizations, take the hint. Take the hint. This is not about helping homeless people. This is simply about perpetuating that same stereotype, that same us versus them narrative that continues to divide our community. So if you care anything about healing our community, then we need to heal with memory of why people are homeless in the first place, and make sure that it is our responsibility as a society to bring together solutions that address these individuals and not penalize them and keep them in a cycle of poverty, the same way that bail and so many other financial instruments have kept poor people in the cycle of poverty. That's what I would say.
Is there anything else that you feel that I've missed that you would like to add?
You know, I think the biggest thing I would say is that, again, like, we need to make sure that when we're thinking about these ordinances in the first place, it should not have been advanced in the first place. It should not have been considered like that. We need to make sure that it's been approved by the homeless community before it even makes it on the agenda of Santa Cruz. That's the first part. So we need to create a process that really is informed by the community, that really is directed and guided by the community. We need to make sure that that process is completely community-owned, because Santa Cruz City Council is supposed to reflect that community.
Interrupt. Try not to look so much into the camera.
Yeah,
just
sure.
To me.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Could you continue on with what you were saying?
Yeah. So we need to be effective. We need to basically look at the solutions and make sure it's generated by the community for the community. And the community has to have all the say before it even reaches the Santa Cruz, you know, the City Council agenda. It needs to have gone through housing organizations and anti-racist organizations before they reach that. So that's one thing I would say, that the procedure needs to really be informed by the people who it's been affected by. And that needs to be something that we don't just advocate every single time we come out here, and every single time they're advocating for something. We need to institutionalize that kind of thinking in the way that we consider policy in general for the city of Santa Cruz, that it needs to be always guided and directed by the people that's going to be most vulnerable and most affected by its consequences.
Well, yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Oh, one more thing. Sorry. I was going to say that these solutions are not data-driven. There's no evidence that penalizing certain areas is going to reduce homelessness. So at the end of the day, if you really are about making sure you have cost-effective taxpayer dollars going into solutions that are really going to solve the problem, we need to make sure those solutions have evidence that they work. And no evidence has been provided. It's simply off of ideology. So they're hypocritical to say that this is somehow a solution when they have no evidence, no bullet points, no metrics of what it even means to solve homelessness. That's a really big one.
Okay. Thank you so
Actually,
much.
I forgot to say that out there, too. That's a really big one.
Repeat your name again.
I'm sorry?
Repeat your name.
Io Banjo. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah, so just let me know. Can I also get my email?
Yes. Let's see.
So, what's your name?
My name is Stephanie Aceves, and I'm with KION News.
Stephanie, long time or just a newcomer?
I'm new. Yeah, I'm new to this area, so.
Well, I'm glad you're interested. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Okay, so sorry to take up your time. My battery's about to die.
Okay, I'm looking into the light here because I didn't bring my glasses. I got to look at this this way, so.
Okay, do you mind if I come quickly to my car and then come back?
Not at all.
Okay.
Go for it.
Thank you. Hi, again.
I'm talking with...
Andrea.
And Andrea, you are an actual homeless person who isn't simply...
I'm
a supporter, but you're actually a person who you've been living in your vehicle and outside for a while.
I'm freezing to death, actually. I'm freezing to death.
Well, then you need to start running in place or get to a warm place.
I need to move to L.A. as soon as Arizona or something.
But you will have a car to sleep in tonight.
Yeah.
Did you hear any of the speeches?
Yes, I did.
What was your reaction?
I thought it's good and everything. I think they forgot to mention something. The homeless people usually don't pay taxes. And I think
sales tax.
No, they don't. Yeah, sales tax. They don't pay property tax. And I think that's the bottom line. I think the city council is more focused on people that pay property taxes. Is the way things are set up politically.
I'm going to turn now to this other reporter, but I'll be back. No, I'm the devil. You're the advocate. So we're talking to a KSAN reporter?
KION.
And you covered most of this, but you're new at this.
Yes.
And let me ask you what your reaction to these speakers were. Did anyone particularly strike you or impress you?
I thought the gentleman that I just spoke with... very impactful.
Did you learn anything new that you didn't know before?
I've covered the ordinances before, so I'm a bit familiar with what the ordinance, and they did make some changes to it, but I'm familiar with a bit of what they've listed in the ordinance.
Did anything you hear here change your mind in any way?
You know, as a journalist, I have to be objective. But
as a human being, when you go home and you're not and you're with your journalistic hat on, what would you say?
I don't know. I don't know if I can express that on the clock as a journalist. But, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure.
All right, journalist. Well, go ahead with your work. And.
What was that question that was so difficult?
What did she really, was she moved by what was said in any particular way? Was her opinion changed?
Oh, you're not sure if your opinion has changed, or maybe it didn't
She doesn't want to say, I think.
Well, she's not saying.
So what you're Stephanie, yeah?
Yes, Stephanie ASF.
So... you want my name, spelling, etc.?
I'm going to see you on Thursday because I've got papers for tomorrow.
Sounds good.
And I need to get hotties because I'm going to freeze if I don't.
Do it.
So, love you. Have a good night.
All right. Take care of yourself, man.
Okay. If you mind, just giving me your first name and last name.
Robert Norse, N-O-R-S-E.
And can you describe a little bit to me, your position?
I'm with a group called HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and I also have been a local radio and net broadcaster with Free Radio Santa Cruz since 1995, particularly on homeless and civil rights issues here in Santa Cruz.
So, yeah, Can you tell me a little bit about what occurred today, how your involvement in it?
Well, I was just here to record, as you were to some extent, to do an interview or two. Mostly I was just taking the statements of the speakers, some of whom are quite eloquent. The real problem, of course, is we're dealing with a city council which is refusing to hold public meetings, although there's a building right next door where they could, the Civic Auditorium, which has the ability to provide for 6-foot spacing and so forth. So the community is fundamentally locked out. Both the critics and the supporters of this ordinance have to communicate by a really difficult Zoom process. Essentially, all power is put into the hands of the city manager during this COVID period. But again, it's not just COVID. It is a decision of the city council and the mayor, Mayor Myers, to not make public meetings. And that's been the case for the last, well, it hasn't just been the last year. It's been the last few years. I mean, you heard your last speaker you interviewed talked about a democratic process. There is no democratic process here in Santa Cruz. It's an elitist process, ruled to some extent by those who are elected, often with overwhelming funds, but also organizational concentration in the conservative parts of the community. West Side Neighbors, Take Back Santa Cruz, Downtown Association, Santa Cruz Police Department. All these people are powerful. These organizations are powerful. And this ordinance is, of course, a revival of the camping ban, which is an ordinance that the police brought to the city council in 1978 and it caused misery for literally thousands of homeless people. In its original language, it banned sleeping after 11 o'clock at night. The new ordinance, as you know, because you're familiar with it, allows for so-called limited camping in very unspecified areas during the dark, provided you pack up your stuff and carry it with you twice a day. And it provides no real locations to do this. The fines claim to be $20, but when you go to court to, for example, pay the bail, if you don't want to actually get to court, but you want to pay off the fine without going to court, it's an infraction. As of last year, it was $197. So those are the court costs added to the $20 base fine. And this was acknowledged by the city attorney, Anthony Condotti, when he was revising the bail schedule, but not in this particular ordinance discussion. It hasn't come up. So there are all kinds of things that have been said today. The real issue to me is that it's, as speakers have basically said, this is a get-out-of-town ordinance or get-out-of-sight. Take your pick. And the real issue for the community, including folks listening to this at home who aren't homeless, is how do you fight this kind of injustice when it's being perpetuated under cover of legality? The police chief, it's done through a whole slew of lies that the police chief, Mills, has said that he has the power to enforce this ordinance. You may have been noticing the jail isn't taking people. They take people and they let them out. So what this is, it's a penalization of people, punishment prior to court, punishment essentially without crime, where you've created a crime that the police can use. And there are various aspects of the ordinance that were not discussed by the speakers, which have to do with the fact that they aren't related directly to the ordinance, but they are enabled by the ordinance. So, for instance, there's a thing called the stay-away law, which you may have been familiar with at other times. This is a law that says if you're in a park and you get any infraction, the cop of his own accord, before you go to court, before the city attorney decides to charge you, just when he writes the ticket, he can order you away from that for a period of 24 hours or 72 hours if the park, any part of that park, was near a school. This is before you're found guilty. And this ordinance has been on the books now since 2013 or so, and thousands of homeless people, and almost primarily and exclusively homeless people, people with 115 Coral Street addresses, people with post office box off addresses, people with homeless or transient written on their citations. And I speak because I sat across this
building over there and went through hundreds of citations in 2014 to determine, was this ordinance being selectively enforced? And that, of course, is a key issue with this ordinance that is now being put before us. They call it the temporary outside living ordinance. But I call it TODA, the temporary outside dying ordinance, because that's really what it says. If you look at the homeless stats, homeless deaths are twice what they were last year. And homeless death rate, people die 20 years younger than ordinary population. And that has to do with all kinds of factors, but certainly not the least of them is the kind of stress people are put under by the attempt for people who are indoors, some people, not all people, to maintain their property values, to have a sense that they don't, that the tourists will not be discomforted by eating an expensive meal at one of the cafes while there are hungry people outside. And they say there's nothing that's as bad as, I really hate to see a hungry face when I'm eating a nice warm meal. This is a line from a song.
Ultimately, what do you think an ordinance like this will do?
What'll it do or what won't it do?
What will it do?
Well, you know, it's interesting because it seems to me primarily a public relations stunt to please a particular political constituency. Because part of the ordinance, as you probably know, says they claim they're not going to be enforcing it until they have storage facilities available for people, because it's illegal to have to be resting during the day with a tent. I mean, it's ridiculous, that kind of stance. It's also, I think, unconstitutional, and it'll probably have to be defended by the city attorney. But the fact is that it's what you're asking, what will it do?
What do you think, in your opinion, the city says it's going to do one thing, but what do you think it will do?
What are you saying the city claims it will do? Let me ask you that. You've interviewed them. What do they say it will do?
They don't think it's a cure for homelessness, but from what I've listened, they think that it'll alleviate or maybe help, from my understanding. So what is it that you think it will ultimately do?
See, that it's interesting. The very vague way you put it indicates to me the kind of lack of answer you got to that question from people who are backing this ordinance. It has nothing to do with homelessness. Homelessness means creating houses. And most of the social services, even those that are well-intended, like Housing Matters, which I call Funding Matters, because that's what they are. They're a fundraising group that does not provide anywhere near the kind of housing based upon the kind of money they get from grants and from government and from private individuals. So a lot of the social service stuff is unfortunately not very effective. The real issue, and one of the reasons it's not effective, is that this city council and other city councils like it create ordinances that are primarily concerned with keeping people out of sight and out of town, as I said before. And the camping ordinance was, as I said, one of the ways they did this, but then it was declared unconstitutional in Martin versus Boise. But so what Chief Mills did, he comes from Eureka, where there was a similar lawsuit, and he had to deal with. He created a sort of a concentration area for homeless people to go to, a parking lot. But then 6 months later, they had dispersed them, and it was a way to essentially deal with a lawsuit. I think that's what this ordinance really is. It's a way to create the appearance of some kind of enforcement for people who just don't want to even see a homeless person on their sidewalk.
And let's take a respite, a fast break from this thrill-packed narrative, but we'll be back to it in just a moment, folks, so don't go away.
We have come here on our own free will to fight for dignity against savage places, profits above humanity. We have been crushed by the wave of capitalists, and abused and abandoned by the laws of politics. We have learned from Cairo, from Iceland and Madrid. Now it's time to extend the fight and spread the word. We will remain here in this square where our voices carry weight, fighting for the lives that we deserve. Well, they thought we were asleep, that they could carry out the cuts, cutting back our rights without resistance, but they were wrong. We are fighting both peacefully and not. With great determination, we will drive the old world out. We have learned from Cairo, from Iceland and Madrid. Now it's time to extend the fight and spread the word. We will remain here in this square where our voices carry weight, fighting for the lives that we deserve. We who share a common rage against inequality are united by our will to build a new society, representing no party and represented by none. No, the people as a whole must lead the transformations we have learned from Cairo, from Iceland and Madrid. Now it's time to extend the fight and spread the word. We will remain here in this square where our voices carry weight, fighting for the lives that we deserve. Places profits above humanity. United we are fighting both peacefully and not. With great determination we'll bring a new world about. We have learned from Cairo, from Iceland and Madrid. Now it's time to extend the fight and spread the word. We will remain here in this square where our voices carry weight, fighting for the lives that we deserve.
And that was the song Declaration from an album by Ryan Harvey, Can't Turn Back. And you can turn back now if you don't want to hear more of this interchange between me and the KION reporter. But here it comes.
And certainly not in a tent. You know, what's that going to mean? My children walking by. The idea that children are menaced by homeless people, you'll see no statistics ever presented to a city council about that. There's no, and that's why it is such, it's like the kind of stuff Nazis use with respect to Jews or gypsies or other, or disabled people or mentally ill people. What they did to them, you know what they did to them. I'm not saying the city council is necessarily doing that, but it sets the stage for the environment to do that to people, whether it's vigilantes, whether it's wet and cold weather in winter, whether it's COVID, when they aren't providing the kind of facilities that they needed to provide, instead shoveling them into some group shelters where COVID is more likely to spread in violation of CDC guidelines, or they just disperse them and then ignore the CDC shelter in place. All this is being done. What you have is the police chief is currently using all kinds of laws to get rid of people in public places other than the camping ban, but he wants to use the camping ban. And he went around from group to group. I don't know if you were around last year when he did this. He went to various groups and pushed for this ordinance or another version of it, an earlier version of it, as well as some other laws. It was a 7-point program that Andy Mills had. And he organized with Next Door Neighbor and other groups. It's an association of groups he went around and did this with. And so he's been pushing for this. What he's been using in the meantime are other ordinances: blocking the sidewalk, public nuisance, unlawful lodging. So the same thing is being accomplished other means, but he wants to have something to frighten the homeless community with and to reassure the residents with. And that is really a lot of what this is, because if he actually tried to go after every homeless person that will be violating this ordinance, many jails would be filled. So instead, it's just a terror tactic, really.
What do you think the city should do?
Well, you obviously, what you need to do is you need to have a kind of, first of all, I mean, I, for decades, have said simply, you can't criminalize sleeping. It's a human function. And you can't criminalize camping where it's an emergency situation. And Santa Cruz declared an emergency that is continuing in 1990, in 1995, and in 1998. And I believe it's continued since then as far as shelter emergencies go. That's how they get money from the state. They're saying they don't have there's not housing for people who are outside. And that being the case, the first thing I work on is that's often a question that's raised. Well, what's your solution? I have no solution. But I do know you don't treat people like dogs or criminals because you don't want to see them around. You start there. And then you go to whatever the next step is. Obviously, housing of all kinds, camping areas, transitional shelters, agreement encampments with other neighbors. There's plenty of vacant buildings around here. I should tell you that both of us are illegal right now. It is illegal for you and I to be here after 6 o'clock at night when there's no physical city council meeting here, as far as I know. They have closed all this area because we used to have protests here about this very practice by the police of criminalizing homeless people. So if you look at the signs around City Hall, you'll see a whole series of requirements. One of them is closed 6 p.m. to 7 a.m. There are squad cars driving back and forth behind you. They're not coming to get us. You're media. They're not going to try to get you. And they're probably not going to try to get me. But again, it's an attempt to make everything as inhospitable for homeless people. You have to ask yourself, is that something you want? And where's the evidence that this is needed? Yes, you don't like the look of tents. Yes, you are worried about COVID. Well, then you start dealing with it as a real problem, as it was when there was a fire. You establish motels. You take them over. You eminent domain them if you need to. You've got all kinds of vacant housing. They're not being used. Tourists aren't coming to town in droves here. So in the meantime, you do what's necessary to serve the local community. And you don't lie about it and demonize the people as a sort of a scapegoat or a pariah. And that, unfortunately, is what they're doing. And it's pointless to talk to the city council, unfortunately. I found this. I mean, if you listen to their debates throughout the last year, defund the police, large, angry people, and presenting all kinds of rational bases suggesting there are much better ways to deal with homeless people and problems, even that neighbors have with homeless people, than this current situation. But they have taken no action at all. In fact, the CAHOOTS suggestions from Eugene were by Cynthia Matthews, and her majority, which is now led by Myers, was shoveled off until June. I don't know if you follow what the CAHOOTS situation is.
I'm new to the area, so literally only lived here 2 months.
Welcome to Santa Cruz.
Yeah, thank
you. CAHOOTS is a method where a certain amount of the budget, not very much, was apportioned to social service workers to go out and deal with problems that arose with homeless folks. You know, you'll hear Andy Mills complaining, well, so much of our budget is taking place with these homeless people. We have to go out to these calls. Even he claims he would like to see this done by some other group. But then he wants an increase in the police budget, and the money has to come from somewhere. Instead, it's going for arming people, essentially with hammers, and homeless people are the nails in this situation. And the city council, as I said, is not listening. That's why when I feel sort of sad when I hear the crowd here talking about, oh, well, just send them letters, call, there'll be an election. You know, there'll be an election in 2 years, year and a half. You know, you get to wait for that later. That, of course, in the meantime, of course, what really happens is you need direct action by people to support folks outside and to do the kind of resistance that happened in San Lorenzo Park when masses of people came out to stop the police from improperly removing the San Lorenzo campers, dispersing them throughout the community until such time as the Union of the Homeless could get an injunction, which they did, and which has also happened in Sausalito recently, which you may or may not be aware of.
No, I'm not sure.
Dumfries Park and the Anchorouts have gotten an injunction. The same Union of the Homeless up there has done that, another chapter of it. They've gotten an injunction actually quicker than the one we got here, stopping them from dispersing homeless people from Dunphy Park. And so it's the community that needs to resist this. And resistance can't be appealing to people who aren't listening. And you don't have to listen. They're very well insulated. They've got a well-funded police force. And people are scared for all kinds of reasons now, particularly because of COVID. Even though things, you know, may be turning the corner, it's hard to tell. It's not really clear what impact the vaccinations are going to have yet.